This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750, WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Phil Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
All right, it's 10 a.m. Let's lace up the golf spikes and get those clubs out of the trunk of the car. We're gonna take you down the fairways here of Golfers on Golf Radio. We're gonna bring you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective for the next hour. As you heard in the intro, your host this morning, I'm Ed Stevenson, PGA professional with the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County Golf Courses. Alongside me is PGA Life member and former touring professional Bill Berger. In studio, we've also got Rory Spears, longtime Chicago area sports journalist. And we have the Illinois Golf Hall of Famer, a journalist, Len Zien, who will be joining us on the line. And, guys, it's absolutely gorgeous day. We had a hot stretch, one of the hottest stretches in early September earlier this week. But, gosh, we've turned the corner. It's feeling a bit like fall golf. And we know fall golf is going to mean a few different things. It's going to mean, well, the Ryder Cup coming up, but before that, it's going to mean live golf in the Chicago area as well.
Yeah, it sure is. And we're looking forward to having a longtime former Golf Channel broadcaster, Jerry Foltz, with us here later in the program today. Jerry's over part of the live broadcast team, and he's going to talk a little bit about what's coming up at Rich Harvest Farms and the season ender, I believe, down at Doral in Miami for Live Golf. And prior to Jerry, in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Mark Spadoni, the executive managing director of the Homestead out in Virginia. And, you know, we talk a lot about renovations on this program. As a matter of fact, exciting news out of Wheaton this week. Cantini Golf next year, getting ready to start a four-year renovation program, and we'll talk a little bit more about that during the show. But Ed, you've gone through a renovation over at the Preserve at Oak Meadows, and I know you're looking ahead to course improvements over at Maple Meadows. But did you spend over $150 million to do it?
No, we had a large scale renovation, and really one of the largest in Chicago area history. But I'm not sure how you get over $100 million in a renovation. So I'll be interested to hear from our friends at the Homestead. Obviously, some ambitious plans there, but. Yeah, certainly you see a lot of properties, and interesting to hear about Cantini that understand that you do have to reinvest from time to time in your golf course. You know, having a golf course is a lot like having a house. You know, as a homeowner that your gutters are eventually going to go, your roof's going to go, you're going to replace the HVAC system. Well, with golf courses, it's going to be, your irrigation system. It might be your cart pass, but it might be other amenities, your buildings for the pro shop and clubhouse. Always something to renew, replace, and reinvest in. And north of $100 million, they did a lot of work. That's off the charts.
Yeah, they sure did. You know, I'm at a club where there was recently almost $13 million worth of work done, Heritage Oaks in Northbrook. And speaking of that club, congratulations to our almost 8-year executive director, Molly Hamer, on her retirement from the Northbrook Park District last week. She was very instrumental in getting the golf course and the new clubhouse rebuilt. And prior to that, she was part of the Schaumburg Park District and was there during the early planning stages of seeing that club get totally rebuilt as well. So she's been a driving force in golf course improvements. And again, we wish her well in retirement. And Len Zien, how are things down in Florida? We also understand there was a more or less a semi-retirement over in your neck of the woods at the Innisbrook Resort. And Mike Williams is stepping back for new people over in Palm Harbor.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's about an hour and a half away from us here in in Sarasota, but it's good. Mike is a good man. I hate to see him go. It's an annual stop for us at the Valspar tournament, which is rapidly becoming one of my favorite PGA Tour events to go to. Although this is going to be an interesting month here. I don't remember going through a month like this one we're not going to, not that I'm going to be at all of that, but we have a visit to Pinehurst to see what all is coming over there. And then we have the LIV tournament, and there's a lot of writing to be done, even though it's in Italy, about the Ryder Cup. So, this is really kind of an interesting thing here. This is really a period of time where golf is we don't, for the writing side, from being Chicago based, it's kind of a lax period, but not this year. Overall, everything here. I'm getting ready for the Florida tournaments that are be coming up in a little while. But this is I'm really excited about the LIV, and I'm excited especially to hear about the Homestead renovations. I had to look this up. We had a great stop at the Homestead in 2014, and learned about all the history going on there. So I've got to get back there now that it's finished. It was great when we were there, but I know that they've certainly made a lot of changes. So we're looking forward to hearing what's up there.
Yeah. Well, the Homestead, one of my favorite places to go. And you know what? You go to a destination, you walk in the front door, and you look at the Great Hall there, and it's just outstanding. And you know, it's a resort. It's older than the country, Ed Stevenson. You know, America's birthplace, 1776, and they're 1766 birthland. So they like to say we're actually older than America.
Wow. Well, hey, we love our history in the game of golf, and that's a lot of fun. So that is a lot to reinvent. And you know, Billy, I know certainly you were a young assistant professional at Itasca Country Club. It's amazing. I know that's still a well loved and fun golf course. But you know, so you have some places that have had to completely reinvent themselves and go through major renovations. You get a place like Itasca. I don't know if you've been there recently, but I think overall that layout has stayed tried and true, and I'm not sure we've seen a major renovation at a club like that. But Billy, in your time around the Chicago area, what you remember overall, some places that have truly reinvented themselves or stood out as, do you remember an era of renovations like we've seen recently?
You know, no, I haven't, Eddie. It's amazing, In the old days, probably money seemed harder to get. I don't know. And just simple things like redoing the traps, that would have been a
big project.
It would have been a big project and a funny thing. You're going to redo the traps. You're going to just redo the traps.
Right.
You know, like it was some kind of fixing some kind of disease, you know.
Right.
And
there's supposed to be a trap, right? What do you got to fix with them, right?
And Itasca really had a greenskeeper that was over the top. He was amazing. He really did. I'm trying to make it accurate. He redid four or five holes
in house.
He's in house with a small lift bucket and one other guy. They solved the 15th hole problem where it flooded all the time.
Right.
And the creek came right up to the green, and they thought they got their numbers, which were gigantic. You know how when you get an estimate, you always get the one, the gigantic one, that's way out of line.
That first quote's going to be expensive. Yeah.
So he redid the ninth hole, which really improved. He widened it and made it longer. Yeah. A par five, which was kind of a too small a green for a par five. to hit, you know, just
right. Well, talented, talented guy. That was a lot of work put on the superintendent. Uh-huh. We know the scale and scope of these renovations going on now take on a whole different scale.
Then he went to your area that you like so much up, way up at Lake Bluff.
Yeah,
he
redid. Suburbs,
They had nine holes there. He redid the back nine at Lake Bluff.
Wow. What? Superintendent and course construction
I said, John, how many people do you have helping you? You know, I don't think he had more than a couple.
Wow.
But so I always tease, if I know an architect real good, I say, you know, I knew a guy that didn't need much. He just needed one warm body and a small front loader to do anything, you know.
Amazing what they accomplished with the tools they had. I know some of the tools that the big renovations are using now have changed quite a bit, Rory.
Yeah, you know what? One of the great historic golf courses in America, the Cascades Course out in Virginia, was built in the early 1920s. It's coming up on its 100th anniversary, and it was built by steam shovel and mule train, and one of the laborers on the project was a guy named Sam Snead. So, but to find out a little bit more about the homestead and this amazing renovation progress project that they have gone through, we welcome into Golfers on Golf Mark Spadoni, the executive director and manager of the homestead. Mark, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Thank you very much.
Well, Mark, I'll tell you what, it's been amazing following your posts and your public relations director, Lynn Swan's posts on Facebook and other social media as the process has gone on. And you've taken on quite a big one here. It's not just golf courses, it's hotels. It's been rebuilding the main building, the hot steam bats that are there as well on property. And Mark, take us back to the beginning and getting all the bosses at the Omni Hotel Resort chain on board to take on a project like this.
Well, I mean, it's such an iconic property. Literally, it's America's first resort. It goes back to 1766 and has had a storied history, you know, over the last 250 plus years, and kind of the modern era of the resort, started right around the turn of the century. In 1892 was when we built our existing spa in what is referred to our casino building, and that's an old term used for kind of recreational building where they used to play cards and badminton, etc. And we built our first six holes from a golf course here in 1892, and finished building our Donald Ross old course in the early 1900s, and then as you mentioned earlier, the Cascades golf course in 1923. Actually, we're just celebrating our 100th anniversary or centennial celebration. But it was a property for 30 plus years that was a five-star, five diamond property, and then gone through a couple of ownerships in the 90s and the early 2000s, and Omni brought the property in 2012-2013, and we knew from the very beginning that there was a special property, but it literally needed, what we refer to as that 100-year renovation, the renovation that's going to get us through the next 100 years, and that's the $150-plus million commitment that we have made is to restore this property to its former glory. It's hosted the Cascades Golf Course alone has hosted 8 USGA championships in the past. We've got the 2026 Women's Senior Amateur here in the 2029 USGA Men's Senior Amateur. So that gets to 10. And as you're well aware, that puts us in rarefied air facilities that have hosted 10 USGA championships. And the hotel, I mean, it's soup to nuts being redone. It's been in collaboration, a partnership, so we've, been able to get some historic tax credits, that have enabled us to put the right money back into the property and return it, to the grand hotel that it was. And we're literally in the last 30, to 45 days of wrapping up what will have touched just about every public area throughout the resort. As you mentioned, also the reopening of the Warm Springs pools. But, you know, more importantly, you know, the exterior and the work that needed to be done from an infrastructure standpoint, you know, that we will be around 100 years from now.
Wow, Mark, just the scale and scope of what you're doing is impressive. And I've got to imagine many people who visit there may not appreciate some of the dilemmas that I'm sure your team had. And when dealing with such a historic property, you're looking, you know, you mentioned restoring it. You mentioned that the historic tax credits. Certainly you need some of the allure, I'm sure, is paying homage to the history that's there, and yep. doing historic renovation. Yet at the same time, you mentioned this is preparing you for the next 100 years. So you've got to, consider materials and technology and things that will really suit you efficiently for the next 100 years. How do you find that balance between restoring doing what's historic and also really preparing for what's next?
Well, we went into the renovation with five, I would call them cornerstones or pillars, you know, to go through. I mean, first and foremost, we wanted to make sure we maintained the traditional integrity of the building. Second of all, you know, ensure the iconic elements of the property were either at minimum maintained or in many cases enhanced. An example would be that, you know, obviously our world famous clock tower, you know, which is the centerpiece or cornerstone of our logo, from the copper roof and everything else to the weather vane on the top, you know, restoring that iconic element of it. The third part is adding a little bit greater element of sophistication. You know, I think when you think about the grand hotels in the past, you know, they're spectacular buildings, but in some cases there's an element of simplicity. So for us, it was able to add the sophistication element through some of the design elements, you know, some of the FF&E and the furniture that we have in the property, and I think we've accomplished that. The fourth element is residential. You know, again, how do we make sure that we make it comfortable? And some of that's modern technology driven. So that's streaming services in the guest room, you know, ensuring there's refrigerators in all the guest rooms, you know, 55 or 65-inch TVs, you know, a little bit more overstuffed seating, you know, from a comfort level standpoint. And then the last element, you know, which was probably created the biggest change is the element of light. You know, I mean, we're a resort, you know, and albeit a four-season resort, our goal or objective is to, you know, to put a positive spin, make people feel happy. So a lot of the real dark woods and some of the things that were around the property, we lightened those up. We added, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, worth of upgrades to our lighting systems, which gives us the opportunity through our Lutron systems to have, you know, four or five different light settings. Great Hall is an example. Now all the pillars in the Great Hall are all uplit, and there's coffers up above. So I think that's how you – then carpeting is all Axminster, you know, carpet throughout, you know, which is not something that you would put into a hotel nowadays. You'd put a solution dyed nylon in a lot of areas, but – that's part of the, you know, the elements, you know, from a historic standpoint, you know, would still make it feel special.
Mark, I've got to ask you, tell us and our listeners a little bit about the Great Hall. I mean, you walk into a lot of the great resorts and golf destination properties across the country, and a lot of places have a nice lobby and things, but when you get through the front door of the homestead, there's a main room there that really I think is unmatched by others anywhere. Tell us about the Great Hall. It's just a great place to sit down and relax and feel like you've made it somewhere special when you come through the front door of the hotel.
You're absolutely right. It's interesting. We did our grand reopening of that back in February, and I was doing some research on it, and it was fascinating that even from a dimensional standpoint, that the main portion of the Great Hall is 70 feet by 140 feet. So imagine that. That's, you know, 25 foot high ceilings at zero, which are all columns around it. You know, it's got an inlaid wood floor. The center carpet, it's just stunning, and it's all, you know, got elements, you know, of the flora and fauna, and, you know, in some of the wildlife, you know, within the Virginia and the Allegheny, you know, mountains up here. Our President's Lounge, which feeds off of that, you know, we've hosted 23 presidents at the property, so there's oil paintings of all those presidents going back to George Washington.
Wow.
You know, all the way up, you know, into our most recent, you know, presidents, you know, that we've had, that's there. So there's a sense of history. There's a sense of awe that's there. And then in there, one of our feature elements, you know, within the Great Hall is our Steinway, you know, piano. You know, imagine the 1920s and, you know, actually the teens and the 20s, you know, that, you know, the industrialists, you know, those leaders of industry, you know, and we've got our, you know, archives going back, you know, to some of our guest newsletters, where at one time during the hotel we had J.P. Morgan. I mean, this was a regular occurrence at the property, but, you know, at the same time you'd have J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, you'd have a Henry Ford, you'd have a Roy Firestone, you would have Cyrus McCormick that would be here, and Fred Steinway of Steinway Piano. So our feature piano that's in the lobby, you know, that's part of our afternoon tea and our evening cocktail service, is just extraordinary, beautiful, you know, grand piano that's there. That actually we have a hydrometer on it, you know, to keep it you know, so it doesn't go bad from that standpoint. But you can't help but walk in there and think that you're a special place. And I was talking about those dimensions, interestingly enough. I was going back and doing some research of the Great Halls, you know, back in, you know, in Britain, in the United Kingdom. And it wasn't surprising, I'm sure, that you know, everything was purposeful when they built the property, that a lot of some of the most iconic and historic castles that were built, you know, in England and Wales and Scotland, had very similar dimensions, you know, from a Great Hall standpoint, to that, you know, 75 by, you know, 130, 140 feet.
Wow. Well, I know that one of the great Christmas trees we see anywhere in pictures also resides in the Great Hall every December and the start of January. It's 10:21. We're talking to Mark Spadoni from the Homestead Resort in Virginia. Len Zeem is with us from the Palmair Studios down in beautiful Sarasota, Florida. Len, what have you got for Mark this morning?
Well, you know, we had just a great trip there 10 years ago. But the thing that pops out at me is the a lot that this history does carries really over into golf. The first hole of the old course, I believe, is the I assume it's still set up sort of the same way. It's the longest standing continuous first hole in the history of American golf. Is that right, Mark?
That is correct.
And,
yep.
And also the first president to play golf in office was William McKinley, who played it at the Homestead. I tell you, I know how you can keep coming up with all that kind of history and keeping in, that is available over there. It's just fascinating for me to fascinating for us for the stay that we had there. To commemorate all those things, I don't know if there's a resort that has more history than Homestead.
Well, you know, for us, obviously, the history is great. You know, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to go with and make sure that, you know, we're being relevant. You know, moving forward into, you know, the next, you know, 10, 15, mm-hmm. 20, 100 years that's out there. You know, so I mean, the golf is in fantastic shape right now. You know, as we're coming into fall season, which is just a stunning time of the year, you know, with the fall foliage and everything that that you have up here in the mountains, which makes it a lot of fun. And then we've got three new restaurants that are opening up at the same time too. And one of the things from a relevant standpoint that we actually started 2 years ago is what we refer to as the Virginia Wine Experience. And arguably, you know, one of the more exciting new and upcoming wine regions in the country is in Virginia, whether it's, you know, up in northern Virginia or it's in the Shenandoah Valley or the other areas. There's actually eight different AVAs here. And we have the Virginia Wine Experience, which is a tasting room which allows us to have one of the widest selection of the upper upscale wines from Virginia. There's actually over 350 wineries in Virginia, so it's a great thing for golfers that are coming here, or people who are just getting away from a weekend to learn a little bit more about old world style wines, which are becoming very, very popular.
Mark, I've got to ask you, I know at one time you had three golf courses. One of them was shut down, and I'm not even sure, maybe even sold off. But the Lower Cascades course, JCC once told me, it's down the street from his farm. He said it'd be one of the great golf courses if maybe the routing got changed a little bit. Is there any plans, especially with the demand for golf these days, to look into getting that course either repurchased or up and running again as part of the resort?
At this point, the good news is that the owner that bought it, from my understanding, really bought it more as from a private retreat and almost kind of like a hunting lodge area that's there. I drive by it every couple of weeks. They haven't done anything. Obviously, the golf course has gone to seed, so you never know. I think, it was sold off, unfortunately, before Omni bought it, within the year before we bought it, so it wasn't a choice that we played. But in the back of our mind, as we reposition the property, we get people out there. That old saying, never say never, it's something, that occasionally we will look at, and if the timing's right and the price is right and the economy's right, it's something that we could consider.
Well, Mark, tell us a little bit about the Cascades course. I know you're sitting on year 100, and it's got one of the most unique clubhouses, with the Rubino's restaurant in it. But Cascades, it's amazing how they built it and how you've maintained it and improved it over the years, and maybe that's why it's been home to so many USGA championships in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we tell the story, and it was the golf course that almost never got built. When we knew that golf was booming in the in the 1920s, we went out there and we talked with Tillinghouse, we talked with Rayner. We went out there and said, we want to build another golf course, and because of the mountainous area around here, they couldn't find the right suitable site that would still be close located to the property. Well, we reached out at that time to a relative unknown, William Flynn, and said, do you think that we can, build a golf course here? And he came up, in literally, a rocky, covered with stickers and bramble patch, and went out to the site where the golf course is right now. And he said, if you buy this small couple-acre parcel of land that we can ultimately put right now where hole number four is at, I think I can build you a great golf course. And we bought it. One of his monikers, he's known as the nature faker. And, you got this golf course that's so beautifully built into, the topography of the land here that it looks so natural. But on the front end of our discussion here, I heard you talk with the gentleman before. This was built with steam sobels, with hundreds and thousands of pounds of dynamite that was there. It was an amazing construction feat when they built it, but it's got a great routing. And some of the elements of the Flynn golf course, that, he's one of the ones who started, way before it was popular, the whole concept of multiple tees, to set up the golf course in such a way that based upon your ability, it's an enjoyable golf experience. And there's actually an article in the USGA, I think it's late 1920s, talking just about that, and that's the long running tee boxes, as well as the separate ones that's there. Did a lot with routing to ensure that you've got your prevailing east west, but also your north south, so you're taking wind and other considerations into effect that's there. He utilized separated fairways and a lot of things, which again, a means, to equalize out length on a golf course. And you think about, today, if you're doing that more on golf courses, people are hitting it 320, 350 yards or whatever it is. And if the alternative is a shot down the middle that's in short grass, or a shot down the middle that's 20 yards too far, that's in 3-inch rough or 4-inch rough, maybe people will throttle it back a little bit, from that standpoint. But, it's a very, very unique routing of a golf course, and it's perfectly designed for match play golf, because it ends with the long par three, two par fives. The 16th hole, is second shot's over water, to a green that literally is right on the edge of the lake that is there. Slight dogleg left, par five, and then finishes with a very strong, uphill, 175, 180 yard par three. So it goes 3-5-5-3, which makes some interesting dynamics in match play.
Mark, Bill Berger here. Question, you didn't mention, and maybe I'm dead wrong, originally Northeastern Ohio, and only hearing about the Homestead and an expert caddy, of course. You don't mention any railroad. I always thought that the upper echelon of the railroad business went to the Homestead. Was I wrong there?
No, not at all. Actually, for almost 75, well, actually more than that, probably close to 100 years, the Ingalls family, and he was the president of CNO Railroad, and he was from Cincinnati. And we had the spur that came up here, and that was a key element of what made it popular, during those earlier eras, because the people would be down in the south, and then what was referred here to as the little season, that was from Easter to Memorial Day, that's when a lot of these tycoons and magnates in business come here before they ultimately headed up to the Hamptons are up to Long Island, in the summertime that's there.
Right.
Well, Mark, I'll tell you what, thank you so much for jumping in with us this morning. We're going to let you go enjoy the rest of your weekend. Before we let you go, if you could tell us the website or any social media, how people can plan a trip out to 1766 Land, the Homestead, and also give our best to your director of golf, Mark Fry, and the lady who does so well in public relations, Lynn Swan.
I will do that. If you go onto omnihotelsandresorts.com/homestead, you can find out about the resort. We have 3 daily flights, direct flights in from Chicago. So, and that's into Roanoke, which is about an hour and 20 minutes away. And then for those that have a little bit better means, we're literally 15 minutes from Ingalls Airfield, which is a 5,600 foot runway, so for private jets to come in, and that's literally 12 minutes from the golf course.
Wow. Okay. Well, Mark Spadoni, Executive Director, Managing Director of the Homestead, thanks so much for joining us, and continued success. And one of these days, we're looking forward to getting out your way and seeing everything that's been done since we've been there last time.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, and have a wonderful weekend as well.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, you too. With that, we're going to take our first break. We'll be back with broadcaster Jerry Foltz from Live Golf right after this.
Mistwood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. We're bringing you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. And, yeah, still here in studio, PGA professional Ed Stevenson alongside Rory Spears. We have PGA Life member Bill Berger. And from the Florida studios, we have Len Ziem with us as well. But, guys, we get into September, and, a lot of, you know, usually there's a lot to talk about for NFL football. We're thinking about Bears, Packers, and that sort of thing. Of course, really here in the Chicago area, golf is still top of mind. We've lamented on this show the PGA Tour's somewhat lack of frequent presence in the Chicago area in recent years, and we don't always get to see the USGA here that often, but their starting last year was a great new presence for golf and something that really really highlights the fall season, especially for all of us who love the game here in Chicago.
Yeah, there was a strong turnout last year at Rich Harvest Farms, and they're back to do it again in just a couple of weeks. And to tell us a little bit more about what's going to be happening at Rich Harvest Farms and out on the LIV Tour is longtime broadcaster Jerry Foltz. Jerry, how are you this morning?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing over there in Chicago? Can't wait to get there, by the way.
Great. Hey, the weather's great. Hurry on over.
Yeah. Jerry, I'm assuming you got out to Rich Harvest Farms last year, and where they broke some attendance records at the time for LIV Golf. And I know everybody from Jerry Rich and the team out there are really looking forward to year two of LIV Golf out in Chicago and then Sugar Grove.
You know, last year when I signed on early on, obviously for the first event, nobody really knew what to expect. We had lots of meetings, lots of presentations, and then we were really pleasantly shocked, actually, when we got to London and saw the turnout from the people there and what the product could be. And we're still in our infancy, but when we got to Chicago, again, every time we went to a city, we didn't really know who was going to show up. And, you know, remember, we were kind of facing a pretty strong campaign against us from a PR standpoint and the monopoly that had golf before. So we really never knew what to expect. We got to Chicago and it was like the world changed. Everybody showed up. Everybody had a great time. And that is the common theme with anybody who's attended a LIV Golf event. Even if they're a hardcore traditionalist in the game of golf, they still have a great time. And we're really looking forward to this year and the party hole, the watering hole, if you will, the 17th, the par 3 that's going to emulate and maybe even surpass what we had down in Australia, looks like something that could be, to use a phrase the younger generation uses, epic.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jerry, tell us about the change in your career. You had a long run at the Golf Channel, and how much did you have to think about making the move over to LIV Golf and continue broadcasting with that circuit?
It was an agonizing decision. 27 years at the Golf Channel, a career that I really just backed into when I got done trying to play. I was enjoying it. I loved it. I'd done every tour they did, all their big events. And then the last dozen years, I've been doing the LPGA, something I'm still extremely passionate about. But it was a tough decision. But it was one that my son, finally, he had the final vote. He's a golf nut, 26 years old, works in the golf industry. And he said, "Dad, you know, you don't have that many years left, and you don't want to spend them regretting not having the let's just say, nuggets to take a chance for once in your life. So I took a chance, and I haven't looked back since. It has been the most refreshing career move I could have ever made at this point in my life.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about working, you know, shall I say, with the LIV Golf administration, everybody from, you know, Greg Norman to other people that have been involved in getting LIV Golf launched, not only here in America, but around the world?
Oh, well, starting with Greg, one of the main reasons. There are basically three or four main reasons other than my son giving me the motivation to take a chance. But Greg, of course, a guy I've emulated my whole life, who's treated me and everybody around him like a king ever since I've known him years and years ago. And somebody I can honestly say, and this is a strong statement these days in the world of professional golf, a leader who has our back. And he truly does. And he gave me some advice when we were in London that stuck with me the entire way. You don't hear a lot of PR coming out of the mouths of the players and the broadcasters on LIV, because from day one he said, just take the high road and we'll win. And, you know, we feel like we've been winning the whole time. But the other people behind it from an organizational standpoint, especially from a television standpoint, are, well, the guy whose brainchild it was for the style of coverage we do is a guy named David Hill, who, if there were a Mount Rushmore of broadcast executives, he would be on it. He came up with the innovative ideas, and then he hired a couple of guys, Will Steger and James Watson, to implement them and create new ideas the way it's presented on TV. And they're just phenomenal, phenomenal people, great thinkers, really loyal, benevolent bosses. And then the producer was the guy who originally hired me at Golf Channel, so it was a no-brainer, Keith Urshland. He's widely known as the best in the business, and nobody else could present our product on TV the way it's done other than him.
Well, good people are what creates a culture. And, you know, you mentioned, Jerry, that, you know, when you went for the first event in London, or even as the first year of LIV Golf went on, you know, who knew what to expect? And certainly now here in year two, I think even the fans have a much better idea of what to expect when showing up in Sugar Grove. And yet we know more changes on the horizon. We heard, the announcement of the merger in June, and I, you know, still run into golfers at the facilities I run that, are getting their heads around what that might look like. I'm sure you get asked all the time, now what's next? What will next year look like? And do you have the elevator speech answer of how to, let the golfing public and those interested in watching the best players in the world know what to expect?
Yes and no. Next year is business as usual. We've been told it's absolutely business as usual on both sides of the deal. Who knows? Some of that could change as they hammer out the details of the framework agreement. But it's just nice that from our side, from the LIV Golf side, and I am now a LIV Golf apologist, no question about it, certainly the biggest fan they have, it's just nice that it's okay to watch LIV Golf, to go to a LIV event. You don't have to feel guilty about it like you were made to feel last year. So that's kind of cool. I think the rhetoric has certainly died down in terms of what the structure will be 25 moving forward. Who knows? But it will be really nice if we get to a point where we can have interchangeable players in terms of playing the PGA Tour, playing the DP World Tour, playing LIV Golf, and everybody get along. It's the LIV Golf format and the team format isn't going to go anywhere, because that is really what sets it apart and draws in a new audience for a sport from a consumption standpoint, which has been stagnant for so long. And 30% of the people who view and 30% of the people who attend a LIV Golf event have never been to or watched golf before. So that is really, really growing the audience. We can, you know, pay lip service to the phrase growing the game all we want. But when you introduce the game to a new audience, that curiosity sparks participation. And I think in that sense, it's a good thing all around.
Absolutely. All right, it's 10:42, Golfers on Golf Radio, Rory Spears, Bill Berger, Ed Stevenson here in studio, and we're talking for a few minutes with Jerry Foltz, the LIV Golf broadcast, and we have Len Ziem with us down in the Palmair Studios in beautiful Sarasota, Florida. Lenny, what do you got for Jerry this morning?
Well, I've got to talk to Jerry about the team concept. I like the team concept great. I mean, I've been to a couple of their tournaments in Florida, and I know that a lot of work has gone into making that the team concept more viable. I mean, it was certainly better in Orlando this year than it was in Doral last year, but I think people were more into it. Has that been a from a broadcasting side, has that been, it's certainly just something that's different to people who have just been watching PGA Tour events for years and years. That was that a tough thing to get together, to organize? Seems like it would be.
It's tough from a TV standpoint to keep it all straight because all the golfers are on the course at the same time, no question about it. From a broadcaster standpoint, we'd only known one style of golf our entire lives. When I got to London last year, I'm like, what are these weird names, or what the hell are we talking about here? And then at the draft party, the first night I was in London, I hung out with Westwood and Poulter a bit. And I could see the excitement in their eyes and in their words about it. And they don't need to sell me on anything. They were completely invested in the team aspect. They even came to the very first event with the whole management team in place. No other team had that done. Then I get to spend a fair bit of time around Phil this year, and he is so into developing the team chemistry, the team concept. And moving forward, we're moving into our first year of free agency. After we leave Miami, it's going to get wild and crazy in terms of potential new signings and potential moves within the team rosters as they are. And in doing that, the owner of the team, the captain of the team will be able to, there's going to be financial decisions that go into that, from an equity standpoint. It's going to be crazy how much fun it's going to be to watch, and there's going to be some hard feelings. But by and large, the players, I would say, almost to an entire person, are completely invested in the team, and that's the neat thing about it. If you play bad one day or 2 days, you still have a huge responsibility to try and contribute to that team the last day, and I think that is something that really that brings a different passion on behalf of the players to each round of golf and a camaraderie to it. And I think the other thing too then is that with the shotgun start and the 48 players, they're at the same hotels by and large. They all go to the course at the same time. They all go to dinner at the same time. Even though you hang out with your team mostly, you're still friends with the other 44 players. And there is that camaraderie that's been lost in professional golf when at a PGA Tour event, you have 144 different corporations playing each week. This is, 12 teams and 48 players, and they all have embraced it. They all feel a little bit like renegades still, but not as much as they used to.
Well, Jerry, what did it mean for LIV Tour players to put on the showing they did at the major championships this year to see Brooks Koepka win the PGA and now be named to the Ryder Cup team?
Yeah, well, it didn't hurt. It wasn't necessary, but it didn't hurt. Statistically, it was impossible that the LIV members didn't feature in the majors, just from a true world ranking standpoint, not the one that's currently in place, but from a true ranking standpoint, it would have been a statistical anomaly for our players not to feature. We actually overachieved in all four majors from a statistical standpoint, but not as much in the Open Championship as we did in the other three, but still, from a percentage of field to percentage of top 10s, top 25s, made cuts and all that, we overachieved from that respect. But that, that shouldn't have caught anybody by surprise at all. Unfortunately, there was so much talk about, they play three rounds, they play in shorts and this and that, they're not ready, they don't. No, you don't get a nice contract and then forget how to be a good quarterback. It just doesn't happen. So these guys know how to win. They're great golfers. They're strong personalities. And it really is a nice complement of players that make up the current membership of LIV.
Well, Jerry, let me ask you this. Have you had much feedback from the players about their experience last year at Rich Harvest Farms and some thoughts about the golf course and the challenge it gives them when they're out there playing?
Other than a couple of holes that you have to walk single file down to get to the fairway, they loved it. Of course, Jerry Rich is not going to let it be in anything but absolutely perfect shape. That's just the style of man he is. It was phenomenal. The fans embraced it. And you guys mentioned it a little bit, the lack of acknowledgement of the incredible market that is the Chicagoland area for professional golf by the PGA Tour, which has just been an absolute shame. And I think the fans were so thirsty for it. It was much like when we went to Australia this year. They haven't had that collection of world-class players together in Australia in I don't know how many years, if ever. Chicago is not the same exact case, but they are a little bit more, you know, they deserve a little more than they've been getting, and we're really glad to be in that market because I don't see us ever leaving Chicago.
Well, you know, Jerry, and I know you would, you've been around long enough in golf to remember the days when the Western Open used to come to Cog Hill around 4th of July week. And, you know, I know everybody from the Jemsek family that owns Cog Hill to Chicago golf fans, the people are still talking about, wouldn't it be great to have a big-time right. golf event here around the 4th of July again? And, you know, I know we're going to see great crowds out at Rich Harvest Farms, but, you know, September's a crazy month here. We actually, the Cubs are in playoff contention. The Bears have started college high school football, and it's also the high school golf season around here, and it just makes you wonder what would happen and the kind of turnout you'd get at Rich Harvest Farms if there wasn't so many other golf and sports conflicts.
Well, and the good news is we only have 14 events, so our schedule can be very fluid moving forward, and I can promise you the powers that be are very aware of that. Obviously, last year, we threw together a schedule of 8 events, and we did it within a 5-week stretch. That wasn't easy to get world-class courses to play. Now, with the toning down of the vitriol and people having been introduced to what LIV Golf is and seen the fan response to it, we have courses coming to us now and markets coming to us asking for events. And that's a really nice position to be in. But I think the value of being in Chicago and being at the optimum time is something that is not lost on them. And Cubs fan for ever since I can remember, 3.5 games up in the wild card. I can't wait to get there. I hope we get to go to a game. And I'm looking forward to that as well.
Okay. Well, you know, Jerry, one last thing before we let you go. Tell us about the broadcast platforms a little bit. You brought in the CW Network this year, and there's other little things through social media, online, through people's phones, and all sorts of ways now to be in connection and watch LIV Golf.
Well, as more and more of people, even our generation, cut the cord, streaming is not such a strange word anymore. Our Friday coverage is only streaming. Saturday, Sunday, of course, on the CW. In most markets, except your market, we're happy to know that Nexstar owns WGN, so we get a much bigger platform in Chicago than we do in some markets. But CW, the network itself, is in 110 million homes, so more than any cable network that there is. There, you know, ESPN's down to about 75 million, Golf Channel's below that. We're in 110 million homes, and the way I like to explain what CW is to most people is, years and years ago, Fox was the stepchild of all the networks and didn't have anything, and then all of a sudden they made a huge play and got NFL football. CW has new ownership in Nexstar and some really brilliant and motivated people behind it, and they want to be the next Fox, and we were their first move in. They've now got the Xfinity series part of that from NASCAR. They've got some college football, NFL films. They're moving slowly into that major sports market to make a name for themselves, and we're really, really thrilled to be in on the ground floor. You know, making the CW network destination viewing for a sports fan is never going to be easy in the early stages, but I think in the long run, it's going to get there quite quickly within a few years.
All right. Well, Jerry Foltz, LIV Golf Broadcasting, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your weekend to jump in with us here at Golfers on Golf Radio. We look forward to hearing more from you and seeing you out at Rich Harvest Farms in a couple of weeks. Tickets available, livegolf.com. And it should be a good time. There's some concerts going on after golf, and I'm sure everybody that comes out to Rich Harvest Farms will have a great weekend that weekend. And I'm sure everybody from Jerry Rich and the whole LIV Golf group are looking forward to breaking those attendance records that were set last year again this year. Jerry, have a great weekend. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Look forward to meeting you in person.
All right.
Thanks, Jerry.
It's 10:53. We got a few minutes left, and Ed Stevenson, out in your neck of the woods there, DuPage County, the next big golf renovation, and we touched on it for a moment at the top of the show, Cantini Golf, and you know what it's like to work on a project for a couple of years, but they've obviously been planning out there for a little bit, and next year starts a four-year tear up one little part of the property or another, but 4 years gets a little lengthy for a renovation.
Well, you know, it Sure, you know, it does. It's amazing how quickly it goes by, Rory. And, you know, Cantini has been, you know, considered one of the top public golf facilities in the entire Chicago area for a long time. And certainly the team there knows what they're doing. I think part of what's going to be interesting, it follows a bit of the pattern, at least from my perspective, of what we saw happen in Schaumburg. And the fact that there are three nines, 27 holes at Cantini gives you a little different opportunity to kind of phase out your phase your improvements rather than a complete shutdown for a more condensed period of time. I know even as we are considering plans and renovations for our Maple Meadows golf course, amongst the properties that I oversee, where we have 18 holes, it is really tough to imagine being shut down when golf is so robust right now, so healthy. There's so much demand for golf that one-year project costs is the downtime. So I think if you have the ability to still stay connected with your customer base the way that Cantini certainly will and get improvements done over a period of time without completely shutting down the property, it's certainly a viable strategy.
Lenny, I know that you have looked at a lot of renovation projects over the years. Matter of fact, your own club in your backyard, they did one course with Mike Benkuski, architect from up here in Chicago, and now you're looking at course number two. Give us some thoughts on the world of renovation golf. And I know that you're pretty excited because we got the announcement from Pinehurst this week, April 3rd, 2024, opening day for the new 10th course by Tom Doak. And you're going to be driving through Pinehurst next week. And I'm sure you're anxious to get out there and walk around and take a look at the grounds.
Well, Pinehurst, yeah, that's going to be a real treat. That's I really, there's so much going on in Pinehurst, but I think the number 10 course there is, you know, I've got to get a feel for what that's all about. Here at, here in Florida, here at the Palmer Country Club, the Wirch, I've been very pleased to be a member. My first almost 6 months at least here, we bought a place that overlooks the 11th green of the Champions course, and all we saw for about six months there was mud being moved out there. It was not the most pleasant sight, but the result was very good when it opened on December 1st of, let's see, it'll be December 1st of 2022. What really helps here, and it would really help Cantini, as Ed pointed out, is that it's not just an 18-hole course. We have two 18s. The other course is going to get some attention as well. These are courses that had good designers. Dick Wilson did the Champions course, and Joe Lee did the Lakes course. Those two combined to do Dubs Ritt at Cog Hill, and of course. But when they did these courses here, one was started in 1957 by Wilson. The other in 1984. It really helps for the player, for the members of the club, for the active people in the area, to have a course to play while the other work is going on. Because otherwise, you know, it takes people away from where they're playing it. Now we could look out and get real excited about seeing the work that Mike was doing here on the Champions course. So I'm going to learn a lot, I think, next week when we have about three or four days at Pinehurst on our way to Chicago to report off on the live event. But it's a really exciting thing there. I was around Pinehurst and was one of the first players of the Pinehurst number 9, which was a Nicklaus course. But I think this one's going to be even more impactful down the road for Pinehurst. It's what I've been reading about it. It's going to be something different, and I really look forward to seeing it.
Well, it's going to be. I think part of a new development part of Pinehurst. There'll be another course there. There could be another short course. There's going to be some villas. There's going to be a lot of things out on that site that used to be the old Pitt Golf Course. And I'm sure you'll get there. And Bob Farron, the Pinehurst Director of Grounds, who joined us earlier this year, will be a great tour guide for when you get to Pinehurst. And Ed Stevenson,
plenty of
things going on. And maybe next week we'll hear from you and Greg Martin, maybe. maybe about the next step over at DuPage Golf.
Well, we'll look forward to chatting next week. It's amazing how quickly the time goes by. I know we're up against the end of it. Len, I just got to say that they say the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, but I think I like the way you book your travel. That divergence through Pinehurst, that's a pretty good way to get back to Chicago, and we're going to look forward to seeing you. Hey, also, you know, Rory, I thought you made a great point. You know, we've all been thinking and wishing that the best players in the world, whether it's LIV, PGA Tour, USGA Championships, would spend more time in Chicago. I think if they knew to get to Jake's Pizza on Grand Avenue in Franklin Park to visit Bill Berger for the best thin crust in Chicago, I think we might see them back here a little more often. But
well, nobody goes hungry when they go there.
Absolutely. So, hey, with that said, we want to thank you, our listener, for tuning in. It's been a great hour. It's gone quickly. We want to thank our guests. We want to thank our producer, Brian, for getting us out to you loud and clear. And on behalf of Len Ziem, Rory Spears, Bill Berger, and myself, Ed Stevenson, enjoy the rest of this gorgeous weekend. Tune back in next week. We'll be back at 10 a.m. for more Golfers on Golf. And until then, hit it straight.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.